Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... I'm going to talk to you today about the vector potential A in electrostatics, and I suppose it would be statics, but... Today I'm going to talk to you about the electric potential A. Now, you've all heard of the electric potential V, which is a scalar or a single-digit quantity. The electric potential A is something which is sort of hidden in maths, in electrical phenomena. And I must admit that I went up through university, and in third year stuff, we're going to teach you other things. We'll leave that for the moment. There is this vector potential A. And by and by, I've had some sort of time and sort of rehabilitation and stuff like that to go back and start to throw myself at textbooks and to try and learn things. And really, with sort of no friends, no colleagues, no courses to go to, I've had to go and look at it and throw myself at it over and over again, these books. So vector potential A is very, very important. And so what is it? Well, now, your potential, your scalar potential, is something that you can measure with a voltmeter. It's how many volts. A voltage is a unit of potential, and you've got a unit of charge, and you have a unit of force, and you have a unit of force per unit charge, which is your electric field, and the differential of your potential V is your electric field. You'll go through some of that. So already there will be some people who will switch off. And if I can ask, just don't switch off, and I'll just go through a few things. Now, one of the things is that you can measure electric potential voltage quite well. And what you can do is by this sort of mathematical channel, the voltage is the amount of energy you have to do to move a unit charge to a particular position. And normally that would be quite hard to calculate. However, we've got this magic thing. We've got these magic pipes that connect that position out of your page, out of the diagram, out of the environment. This pipe takes the energy and provides a sort of a energyless free run and puts that energy across a circuit, all across a circuit, and then free energy, full run there. So if you can sort of imagine I've got to work out how high it is for me to actually, how high above sea level I am. So if I suddenly was able to dig a hole and dig it and have a hole directly beneath me and drop a stone down to sea level, I could listen to how long the stone took and work things out that way. Now, this is obviously not in your real life walking around, but you can do that with electric circuits, because a magic tube which has no electric potential across it, no loss across it, is a wire. So we've got these mechanical things which can go in and put a wire across it. Now, I've used the word divergence there. Now, one of the things that you tend to do is that our way into the electric world is by these ideas of scalars. So scalars is sort of like a scalar would be your age. A scalar would be your age, would be a temperature. Everyone born on your day is the same age as you. It's a unit thing. You can't get, you can't add your age at right angles to each other. It's not a vector quantity. So we've sort of rather taken a sort of soft introduction to electricity or electrostatics, and that's sort of led us at the base of this cliff by not taking... It's sort of... let me tell you a little side story about the legend of the Blue Mountain. Legend of the Blue Mountain is because it's a made-up story. It's actually not true. But if you go into the Blue Mountains... the Blue Mountains is this old, huge, massive riverbed. It's a riverbed of a river which is 100 kilometres wide. It's sort of amazing. And it left a riverbed sandstone over millions of years, a kilometre thick. And so you've got something 100 kilometres wide, sandstone, and it's a kilometre thick. And that sandstone has eroded, so the top layer is more contaminated, so the glass holding the sand together, so that sandstone is particles of crystals of sand held together with glass, which is sort of nano fiber stuff. I'm just going to listen to this. Yeah, are you okay there, honey? What's wrong? Yeah, oh sorry honey. Yeah, so I'm just doing a podcast on the vector potential. I'm doing it badly. Okay, so I'm doing about the vector potential and talking about the sun. Sorry, about the Blue Mountains as an allegory to a soft approach. So what's happened is the Blue Mountains is in actual fact really an elevated canyon system. And if you go into the Blue Mountains following the streams, you come into this walled canyon where you can't escape. And that's very much so what's happened with electrostatics, in terms of that we've come in with very simple concepts, and it's meant that we've got a whole heap of people standing at the bottom of this canyon. We haven't explained it further off. Now, the reason that's done there is that voltage is very much a hands-on thing. You can have a measure of voltage, which is a voltmeter. But there is this thing called the electric potential A. And aficionados say, well, look, it's actually a lot easier to work out what's going on with electric potential or scalar potential and the magnetic vector potential A. So you've got V and A. These are potentials. And V and A totally define your electric field. Now, time-wise, not your electromagnetic field. And you want to define your electromagnetic field to define what's happening magnetic dynamically, and that dynamically is define what's happening in the light. If I have a wave, I have a wave in this field. Now, the the V and A, A is a function which will generate the magnetic field. You'll be able to see the magnetic field. A does two things. From A is a function you can have, and it generates magnetic field, and it also generates the electric field. So the voltage is something very similar, is your voltage, your scalar voltage that you measure, your constant one, is very much something to do with the electric charge. And electric charge goes into the simple V, and you measure it there with a voltmeter. That's perhaps a simple thing. Now, you need to actually get, in terms of your ideas, some of the symbols. Now, there's, and I'm just going to try and give a bit of a talk about this. And this is sort of strange because you sort of learn something very much in the mold that you... Like, there's sort of three phases of learning things, and a lot of people... Or four phases. The zeroth phase is that you don't know. The first phase is how it's taught. The second phase is computer simulation of it. You know, to do this computer simulation, when you write the computer simulation of it, you do the maths. It's not just the maths is then written and it's allowed to go through, and you can see how the maths goes through there. And finally, there's a third phase of putting into natural thought. So that third phase going across, and so a lot of people are left, and there are these key operators that you have to have or are convenient to have in Maxwell's equations, and they're called the divergence and the curl. And what I'm going to do at the moment is just give a little bit of a story about divergence and curl with the hope that I can actually explain it. It's from this third phase of where it becomes more natural. That's where you have enough and it's a memory, and then your memory goes back. You go back to your memory, and your memory is a much more organic memory. It's not a referential memory, it's a direct memory. So let's do divergence. Divergence is an upside down triangle, and it's in general, it's a differential thing, and it can have an amount, or it can have a vector. You can do a divergence of a quantity of, say, like a quantity of money, for instance. You can do a divergence of a quantity of money, and where that money is flowing gives it. So divergence is a flow, and what I'd say is that perhaps a better word than divergence is leakage. It's between, if you've got a little bucket that you put around a unit of space, it's what the leakage rate is out of it. So if you have some money and you put it in a purse and there's a hole in the purse, the money is going to flow out of that purse downwards, and if the money is a source there, there's not much money flowing into it, it's flowing out, and you'll have a flow outwards of it. And your, in general, your divergence from an area will be the surfaces and how much flows out the overall surface. So it's the amount flowing out of the surface times the direction. So say, for instance, you have a, to make it, you know, very gross, you have your person from Monty Python who's eaten in too much food, one more wafer, and you just pass it, and then they just explode, and this one, this person begins vomiting on everyone. I don't know, I think it's the meaning of life, a beautiful section. This person trying to find the meaning of life in Monty Python with John Cleese and various people. But that person's vomiting, projectile vomiting out. So what you would do is you'd say the amount of sick is in that person, and you draw a direction around it. And if you measured the direction of vomit, you'd have overall the vomit is going in a single, the average direction of the vomit will be outwards. So rather than, it's very easy to go. Now, if you then take a bubble with that person not inside it and going in, the vomit enters one bubble and exits the other side. And so there's no net movement of it. And this is true for magnetic field. So magnetic field lines are, there's two types of field lines. There's point-to-point field lines from a positive charge to a minus charge, and the other types of field lines are induced field lines, and all induced field lines are loops. So if a magnetic field line can't start at a point, if there's no charge, it's defined to be a loop. And so the only way that you can have a line without a beginning or end is a circle. So they're all loop lines, and there's a fundamental equation saying that the divergence, or the grad, the gradient, or divergence. So this, you know, there's two. I don't know whether that's a divergence of the gradient. I'd have to really think about one. I think one's a vector and one's a non-vector, but it will produce a vector. And the divergence of B is zero. So you can operate a divergence on something, and it's zero. Now, the divergence of current is not necessarily zero if you've got, if you've got, say, a capacitor, for instance, if the current is building up, the charge will flow from one point to another. I have to really think about that. So that's the divergence. However, I want to talk to you about something called curl. So it's the upside down triangle, and it's a cross product. There's a sort of mathematical viewpoint, which is I'd say you put your unit thing where you first taught how to do it, and the curl is doing a cross product, a vector cross product, and so the vector cross product of A dot B is IJK, the unit vectors, then AX, AX, AY, AZ, and then BX, BY, BZ, and then you do this formulation which eventually points out a vector which points out of the plane formed between the two vectors and is equal to the area, area formed by the parallelogram between those two vectors, a very important thing. It's a sort of mathematical contrivance. It's sort of like, this is going to be very useful. So the dot product is very interesting. Dot product is the shadow of one vector on another, whereas the cross product is something you're saying, oh, this is useful because it's useful in physics. You're going to need to use it, so you sort of learn it. So this is sort of like your entry point into, like going into the fairground of physics, of science and maths. You enter the fairground, and then they say, we'll make your way to the information tent. And initially, when you're first there, you grab your map and you get your story about how to go along the place. You don't get a real, you haven't been there several times. You know that there's certain places you want to visit in a certain way to think of it. The grad or divergence, the upside down triangle next to a scalar or a vector has a particular way of operating on it. So basically it says, when you see those symbols, you know that it's sort of like making an order. I'll have the roast and vegetables. And now a roast and vegetables is a simple name, but then it goes out to the chef and you know that you have to cook the roast, put the vegetables at this point. It's a whole series of things you have to do. So so you've got the divergence, or the grad of, I don't know what it is, it's the grad of, but then there's something also called the curl. I want you to take the curl of something or other. Now, often people say the grad or divergence is the gradient or the divergence of it. What exactly does the curl? Now, I must admit, my science teaching was a miss. So what I suppose happening to me is that I'm rebuilding and rediscovering, sort of relaying the foundations, re-stumping the house, so to speak, working the way through. So no one ever explained to me that the curl was sort of like, go and see Mr. Jones in the complaint department. And so people say, well, look, I'm upset with you, I'm going to see Mr. Jones. You don't think that the word, when they say the curl, you never think of the curl actually refers to the curliness of the vector. Now, I actually mean that. So I have a vector in space, a vector hanging in space, and I can produce a number, a object, which says its curliness. So say if I have, say, a tent peg or some piece of metal, long piece of metal, and I want to find out what the curl of it is. So I do something of that. I then break it in half, take the halfway point back to the start point, and then I have two vectors, all right? Two vectors. And of those two vectors, they're not pointing in the same direction. They're not necessarily the same length either. So they might be changing from the first half to the second half. The second half might be getting bigger and turning off to the left, so to speak, or going down or going up. So I take the first half and the second half and bring the first half back to it there. And this is saying, well, what I want you to do is make it continuous, and I want you to shrink it down so I can see instantly how it's turning in an overall curvature. But to say it's not curving, it's straight for a distance, and then I've added another one at an angle. I get those two vectors up, and then I work out the cross product of those. That is, and then add it to itself. I find my cross product, and if you can imagine, it is almost like the torque of these two vectors. So if I've got an angular momentum, it's just like an angular momentum. Angular momentum is that I take the direction it's going in its new direction, and I get how much it's curling or turning. And so this may not help you if you haven't studied angular momentum, but if I wanted to say for instance I have a road, and it is I'm driving on the road, and the road is turning gently to the left. I can see on my dashboard an arrow up. The arrow up means left, and arrow down means right. And the distance that I do is how much I have to turn the steering wheel. And that symbol is your curl symbol. So your road is your vector that you're traveling along, and your curl goes along your direction. So your curl is sort of like the self-torque necessary to steer yourself away. Your curl of your vector, curl of a vector field, is how much you have to steer every point to keep on that vector. So a vector field A, the one thing is that it will continue, and because of the story, it will also loop. Your vector potentials also form a loop. There's the div and the grad, the div, grad, and curl really goes. So if I say, what is the curl of the field? If you're sort of trained the way by teachers who have only read books, and so they can't tell you what it is, they can only tell you how it's done, so you have the basic knowledge, but the actual curl of a vector is how much that vector is curling. And if it's curling off to the left, it's producing a large vector upwards. If it's curling up, it's producing by right-hand vectors a vector off to the right. So let's try and get a few of these things down. Now, what we have said, and it's not necessarily obvious to see, but there's some vector identities. The grad of a curl equals zero. That's a vector identity. And you can sort of see how that's so. So you can intuitively see how that's so. I don't know how to communicate it there. I sort of have a mathematical view, which I can't see. So the grad of B equals zero, the grad of a curl equals zero, so B equals the grad of A. You can start it there. Now, if B equals the grad of A, you can start doing things. So, for every... if B is the grad of A, B is always perpendicular to A, because it's the grad of A. A, the, sorry, the curl of A, did I say that? B is the curl of A. And the curl of A is always perpendicular to A, right? Because the plane of A is turning on. So if you can imagine A bends something, bends a direction, it creates a plane, and perpendicular to the plane of it's been bending is B, because of is the curl of A. And the amount that it's curling around is the length, the height of that vector. So you can very much see it. So B is the curl of A. So if B is a loop, so B can only be loops, because there's no charges to go through. So B can only be loops, and B is the curl of A, you get A looping in through B. So sort of like there's this great thing. If B is always a loop, it's like a rose garden. It's like this hoop garden. If you've got these loops going around for B, you can find a beautiful path between all the B's which travel through A. And so as B goes then. Now, I don't think I can get through all this. Your vector potential A tells you what B is. You get these things that the Laplacian of A is your current, and you can go, that's another vector identity to go through. But there is another thing that they say that's proven, that your electric field with a time-varying magnetic field. What? Yeah, time-varying magnetic field. The way that you can talk about a time-varying magnetic field is that if B is going to change with time, and B is generated by A, you can have A changing with time. And we have that E is your the amount of electric field bleeding out from your currents. So I can get an electric field between two charges. That's its charge density. And it is also has the induced electric field. And the induced electric field is simply dA dt. Now, A is always perpendicular to B. So the interesting thing is that you automatically get the light field of B and E as perpendicular as you go forward. I haven't done a very good job of explaining this, but I suppose the take-home message is that there seems to be the path, the Blue Mountains path, where you take the low knowledge path in, and you get a beautiful view of the Blue Mountains. It's sort of a difficult blue view, but you get a great view of the Blue Mountains by actually going in the basis of canyons. It's very hard, and you get a very intimate knowledge bit by bit. You get this other viewpoint of going across, and from the top view, and this is looking at the vector potential. So the vector potential is the vector potential A generates B, and the vector potential the change. So if I've got a vector A, right, it can be straight. Now, if that vector potential A just becomes, after 1 second, is shorter, I take the difference between my vector potential at 0 seconds and 1 second, and that difference will be the electric field there. So the electric field can actually pull in or expand it. So it's your time varying of it. But also, if I get my vector potential of things like that, and I start to get it over my knee and bend it, that bending, I can bend my electric potential with a magnetic field to get across this to the curl. So look, the take-home story here is that there's some more organic ways. The easiest way to teach a student is to, before they come into class, question them, scan them before they get in the door, and turn them away. People who are not going to be able to understand your explanation, you get them going off to an arts degree or a law degree. You have the lonely souls who've got nothing better they can do, and with those, you give them a bit of stuff, and you make that you fit the students to your explanation. However, we can actually extend the explanations by actually giving divergence is a leaky bag. Curl of a vector is its curliness, its self-talk to go across. And then we can say, rather than what the definition of a magnetic field is, really simply, the Savart laws and the derived things, you can say these fields are things which operate on your A vector to come across. Now, it may not be all that helpful, and I'm in my journey of sort of understanding these things, but it's going across, and perhaps I really don't know whether we may have to change the way that we think of education. I honestly think so. There's that initial joy explanation where there's something in you which goes across, then it's sort of like living your full life, and then when you finally cark it, you're finally carking it, bits and pieces make sense, and it's to try and bring those, that beautiful alternative explanations back, like the old grandpa is telling you how it used to be in the old days. It's not very powerful to get through, but perhaps there is a way of doing it. So let's do that summary again. So these are the things that you should know about, not sex, but the electromagnetic field, but your lecturers were always too afraid to tell you. There's two types of field lines, point-to-point, which is only for charges, and loop ones. And loop ones are ones which go in a circle. And the loop ones which go in a circle can only ever be induced by it can only be induced. So like if they've got no source, something has to be inducing them. Now, you say, well, there's a permanent magnet. Well, we have there a permanent motion. So things which are still, we still say, are in motion. This is the mystery of quantum mechanics, the magic of it, we say, but it is indeed magical. It's from a dimension pulling up. So when you hold a magnet and you feel it, you're actually feeling a dimension beyond your comprehension. So you've got the loop fields, and the loop fields, so for a line field, you have a linear potential. And that's really good because it's the thing that you can measure with a voltmeter. For magnetic field or moving things, you have a different thing, which is a potential, the A potential. And the A potential has the following things. The length of A changing with time is the electric field. And so the A in general will go along the length of A. But then bending A, the way that I bend it, is not along the length of A, but perpendicular to A. So the sense of A is where the vector is pointing up and down, how much it curls. So the curl is literally the curl. And I think no one that I know has ever asked, why is curl called curl? So it's your upside down triangle with an X cross product. Why do people have a cross product? Because this is sort of like it's the formula that you use to explain your process. A cross product is sort of like, cross product is where you get the vector components and you cross them. That's sort of like a way, but it's also explaining how you do a curl. So, but when you explain curl like that, your loop theorem, so I've forgotten what the loop theorem is, you can work out what the curl of an area, curl of a vector going through an area is by your ring current. But you can see by doing the sum around the outside, you can go, and so therefore your curl also explains your loop currents going through. I haven't explained that very well, but that's my best explanation at this point in time. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.